This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's be positive today, uplifting today, if that's possible, with the state of New York football, and go around the horn, as it would be, and say good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Rick, hope you guys are having a good morning. I admittedly am a little nervous about tonight. Gerrit Cole's tune-up start before the second season next week. He needs to have a good outing so I can feel good about what's going to happen in the playoffs. Just
before saying. Before I attack that nervous tonight for the Yankees, let me say good morning to Rick. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, CC.
How's the baby?
Could you imagine if C was a Mets fan?
No. No, I mean, he'd have to
be put in the facility.
Into the postseason. The worst you're going to be is the five spot. Most people think you have the best chance in the American League going to the World Series, and you're nervous for the tune-up start for Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, Dave, I'm nervous. I want to feel good about my team going into the playoffs. Is that such a bad thing, Dave? I mean, I know you're a Mets fan, so you're not used to your team being in the second season, but I'm just saying, the Yankees are actually playing for something. We have expectations. Look, and Gerrit Cole was supposed to be the piece that will put us over the top in terms of being a championship contender. That's all I'm saying. I just want him to go out, give me six innings, a two-run ball or better, make me feel good about the guy that we're going to be dependent on next week.
So God forbid Gerrit Cole goes out there, 5 1/3 of three-run ball. Are you, like, what's your, you're now panicked for next week? Like, what happened?
No, I'm not panicked, but I'm not at ease either, Dave. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to feel like, listen, we already know how much success the Yankees have had in the postseason going up against the Minnesota Twins. I just want to feel good about our track record and how we're playing going into the second season, man. Going into the playoffs, momentum counts. Momentum is a real thing going into the playoffs. Momentum is why the 2011 Giants were able to go on a run and win a championship. Like, I've actually been a part of a team that's done it, so I know how important it is. I just want everybody to be playing good baseball, and most importantly, the guy that's supposed to be the ace of the staff actually going out there and dominating. That's it.
And I can understand that, especially going into a three-game series, right? Like, how important game one is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you want to feel good about Gerrit Cole, and he's been great. I mean, his last couple starts have been great. I think the real question with the Yankees, and I didn't love watching that game, the way they handled the pitching staff. I didn't love the sense
of urgency. Well, they didn't play well last night, yeah.
Well, they didn't play well. But I didn't love the sense of urgency. I felt like one of those Yankees games where it was like, you know what I mean? Like, we can afford to lose this one. Like, we're going to try to win, but we can afford to lose it. I didn't necessarily love the sense of urgency or lack of urgency.
Well, you're right. I think that was their mindset going into the game last night. And you're right, but it's true. I mean, last night was a game they could, I know you might not like to hear it, they could afford to lose. They are going to be locked up with Minnesota, right? They're not going to be caught by Toronto. They're not going to catch Tampa. The question is it going to be in Yankee Stadium or out in Minnesota? But they will be locked in with Minnesota in a three-game set.
But I think it's an important question. I mean, I would, if I'm a Yankees fan, I would rather not screw around, especially in 2020, where crazy things are happening. I know you own Minnesota, but I would feel a whole hell of a lot better if I was playing Minnesota in a three-game series at Yankee Stadium than in Minnesota.
Yep.
That's just me.
No, it's not just you, because I feel the same exact way, man. I do. But it seems like the Yankees are resigned to, okay, just making sure that everybody is healthy and they get everybody to the game next week.
Feels like
that's
kind
of what it looked like last night. You know what I'm saying?
Well, everybody
go out there, get their work, see how everybody is, and we'll go from there.
If you're willing to do that last night, then it's pretty obvious that being home against Minnesota is not the be-all, end-all that some Yankee fans would like it to be, right? Like,
well,
they
it might not be, Dave. It might not be the be-all, end-all, but that's why it puts even more pressure on Gerrit Cole in that start tonight. I mean, not that it's pressure for his start, but just from the standpoint of you want him to go out there and have a good outing. Just because you know this is going to be the guy that's going to set the tone for your team next week. I mean, if you go out there and lose game one to the Twins with Gerrit Cole on the mound, how do you think Yankees fans are going to feel?
Well, I think
after that L.
I mean, you're in big trouble. You can't afford to.
You're talking about me panicking right now. Think about what everybody will be calling in to say about the Yankees.
If we get on the air and the Yankees are down 1-0 and Cole has lost that game, then I think there's reason for panic. Then if I was a Yankees fan, I would panic because you're down 1-0 and you've already thrown your best pitcher. So yes,
well, Dave,
this is
the last time we're gonna see him before the postseason. So I mean, yeah, you want to feel good about what we got, our ace going into next week. That's all I'm saying. That's why I'm saying this is a big start. Higashioka is gonna be catching him. Seems like you know that's gonna be the deal once we get into the playoffs. So I mean, this is what you want. Now I will say this: with Higashioka catching Gerrit Cole, Gerrit Cole has been phenomenal. Like, he's been phenomenal. Like, it's the numbers between Gerrit Cole, with Gary Sanchez catching him versus versus Kyle Higashioka. I mean, it's not even close, Dave. You're talking about Garrett Cole with a 3.91 ERA in 46 innings working with Sanchez versus a 0.90 ERA in 20 innings with
Higashioka. It's got to be Higashioka. I mean, he's clearly more comfortable with him as his catcher.
It has to be.
Well, just think about it, too, though. I mean, you're talking about the backup catcher, right? So Gary Sanchez is going to play the rest of these games. Because you've seen, I mean, you saw in Boston what he's capable of doing offensively. Like, he can single-handedly win you a baseball game. That's why he has such a long leash. But if you're Garrett Cole, I mean, now once the start is over, you feel good going into the postseason. Higashioka's not playing. All Higashioka is going to do leading up to the first game of the series is focus on what him and Garrett Cole are going to do against the Twins. Because he's there for one reason and one reason only, is to get the best out of Garrett Cole.
That's right. That's his role on the team, is to get the best out of Garrett Cole.
Exactly right. So that will be his focus. So him and Garrett Cole can spend, from the time this start is over, leading into game one of that series, focused on exactly how they want to attack Minnesota's lineup.
Yep, completely agree with you. All right, guys, big football day. We got to get into the Jets, obviously the Giants. Will they sign Devontae Freeman? We'll find out about that. Mike Tenenbaum at 10 o'clock. But last night we saw just a piece of the loaded AFC take down a team from the National Football Conference. I got to be honest. If I'm a Saints fan, I am not happy at all today. And you know why? And I'll say it, and you guys can argue if you want. I don't know if I want to say done, but Drew Brees is on fumes right now. I don't think he has a lot left at all. I say he's not a very good quarterback right now.
Well, their defense wasn't good yesterday either.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. It's a bad turnover. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look comfortable, right? Like, you can see it. I mean, maybe the inaccuracy is because his arm is, like, the velocity isn't there. And you know, when you're trying to pick up velocity, you can get inaccurate. But you saw, like, if he couldn't step up in the pocket, like, if the pocket around him wasn't clean and he couldn't step up and really get into the throw, I mean, there's a lot left to be desired with how he can push the football down the field.
No, don't try to put it on a muddy pocket, Rico. Listen, I know that at times it was uncomfortable for him last night, but there were also some times where that offensive line for the Saints had a clean pocket and Drew Brees just missed throws. Like, if you go back to the third possession, third series for the Saints, he was behind on the throw to Deontay Harris. Then he airmails one to Jared Cook, and he's wide open. Now, it turns out Cook was wide open because it was OPI, but he was still wide open, and Drew Brees wasn't close to hitting him. There was one early in the fourth quarter. They got the ball at midfield, clean pocket. He misses a throw on an out route to Josh Hill. Like, those are just things that we haven't seen Drew Brees do. And then on top of that, you have him compound matters by throwing that interception late in the first half. And the Raiders end up getting points out of that drive. And they're able to bookend scores on each side of halftime. Like, to me, that was the turning point of the game. And so, you know, we can make excuses about Drew Brees not having Michael Thomas, but the fact is that Drew Brees is done.
And I've been saying that. You agree with me then?
Well, Dave, I've been saying that the last year. I have been saying that the last year. Drew Brees is done. Look at the last two playoff games that the Saints have played in. Drew Brees looked done then, and he looked done last night. So, I mean, you can point to a lot of different reasons. Now, I also say this. To Rick's point, Saints defense was awful.
Awful.
There were penalties in that game that aided Raiders' drives. I think all of the Raiders' scores, with the exception of the one right before halftime, the field goal, were aided by Saints penalties. Like, I mean, you can't have 10 penalties for 129 yards and think that your team is going to be able to be successful, especially playing on the road in the NFL. Like, I mean, you're talking about defensive holding. Cam Jordan jumped off sides. He also had a horse collar in the fourth quarter. I mean, you had Lattimore with DPI. You had Jackrabbit with DPI. Like, you can't do those types of things and give a solid football team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, a solid offense, more opportunities to move the ball down the field. But that was the story of last night's game.
Yeah, that's the biggest surprise for me, though. I mean, we spent all this time talking about how, you know, teams that returned most of the previous year's starters, same coaching staff, the continuity, would be in better shape than these other teams. And they just, I mean, I don't know if it's he's done. Maybe that's the case. They miss Michael Thomas that much. But they just, I mean, they look out of sync, man. They didn't look good.
But you say that. And they were awful last night. I thought they looked really good week one. Now, I don't think Brees is great at all anymore, but the rest of their team, their defense looked really good week one against an offense we thought was going to be elite. And then last night, they were bad. I think it's the AFC. I think the AFC is at a different level than the NFC.
Wow. There you go.
So that's why. So that's
tripling
why the Jets are struggling. The AFC
down.
Is so
yes,
loaded.
Yes, it's a daunting conference.
It's so I should overlook the them being rated 32nd in the power rankings. Then it's just it's all because of the loaded AFC. Though.
Well, listen, we can only make so many excuses, and let's get into that. I mean, this is where we are, and you know, Joe Douglas was so offended. Remember that when he was on the K Show a couple weeks before the season, he was asked, you know, your team is projected to be one of the worst. And he was so upset and so offended by that. Is there any doubt right now, guys, that the Jets are clearly the worst team in football? Is there any doubt that they're clearly the worst team in football?
No. No, I don't. You name a team that's looked worse.
You can't.
You can't. You can't. I mean, there's some teams that are 0-2, but the way that, I mean.
But the Panthers are competitive. And the Bengals could easily have won a game and you know, had another chance against Cleveland. Like, I don't even think it's all that close. Is there, like, if I said to you the Jets are 32, and we all agree, who's 31? Like, is there a team that's even in the same stratosphere as what the Jets have done the first couple weeks of the season?
No.
No. I don't think so.
No, I mean, Minnesota's been a disappointment, but, I mean, they're a better football team than
Minnesota.
You're
beats
right.
The Jets 10 times out of 10 if they
right.
play.
Right. If they played this week, I got to figure Minnesota is a touchdown favorite over the Jets.
Dave, yeah. you're talking about a game that I watched on Sunday with a quarterback that spent the entire week taking second team reps, didn't even realize he was playing until minutes before the game, and looked better than the quarterback that's going into his third year that we drafted third overall.
Yes.
That's a huge problem. A huge problem. And I don't understand. Like, Joe Douglas is like offended that people think they're going to be that bad.
He's very offended. You heard him, didn't you?
But he's a smart guy. Look at this team. If you looked at this team on paper and said to yourself, "I'm pissed that people think we're bad," the only way you could think that is that your coach is actually a genius and he's going to get the best out of limited talent, which clearly he can't.
I'm just sitting here thinking about all of the young starting quarterbacks, and I feel like I can make a case that all of the young starting quarterbacks around the National Football League look better than Sam Darnold. Like, every single one.
Yeah, you can. I mean, is there a question about Burrow? I mean, Herbert.
No, there's not even a question about Burrow, Dave, and that's the team that is right ahead of the Jets in ESPN's power rankings. The Cincinnati Bengals are 31st.
But I got to tell you,
if Cincinnati played the Jets, I have no doubt in my mind that Joe Burrow will outshine Sam Darnold and the Bengals would win that game.
And correct me if you think I'm wrong. By the way, Breshad Perriman is going to be out at least 1 to 2 weeks on the scroll right now on ESPN.
Yeah, that's a big surprise. Breshad Perriman is going to get injured and miss time.
If I'm a Bengals fan and my team, I've seen them play for 2 weeks, I feel kind of optimistic. I do. I mean, I was right there against the Chargers. I competed against the Browns. My quarterback looks good. Like I feel like it's night and day between the 31st best team and the 32nd best team in the NFL right now, in my mind.
Well, Dave, to me, that's just proof that you don't actually have to win games in order for your fan base to feel energized and have confidence in what you're doing. Like, we always say, well, it comes down to wins and losses. You are what your record says you are. And to a degree, that's true. But everybody recognizes when you're rebuilding, you're just looking for tangible signs of growth in a positive way. And we haven't seen that with the Jets under Adam Gase with Sam Darnold. Sam was the reason why Adam Gase was given a job. Okay, he's a quarterback whisperer. He's going to be able to get Sam to realize his potential. And it feels like Sam has regressed since the moment Adam Gase got here. And there really isn't any hope that things are going to get better because you got the coach and the quarterback both in denial about what's going on in the building. Like, I don't want to hear Sam Darnold talk about how Adam Gase looked everybody in the eye after the game and said it's got to stop and things have got to get better. And then you turn around and hear Adam Gase defending the decisions that he made in Sunday's game or defending the decisions he made in the game against the Bills. Unless there's going to be some accountability from the head coach in terms of what he's doing wrong, how can we expect the players to hold themselves accountable and play up to a higher standard?
You can't. You can't. I mean, that's really where it starts for me is the lack of leadership. And Dave, I mean, you guys talking about rebuilding. You're year three of Sam Darnold. This is year three.
I mean, you should never be in this position with year three of a young quarterback you think is the answer. Ever.
No, you shouldn't be, but this is what happens when your GM, his schedule, his timeline doesn't match up with your young quarterbacks. because for some reason we thought it was a good idea to let Mike Maccagnan draft and spend all the money and then fire him. And then go into the season where, I mean, everyone outside of even Ira, I mean, who there's no bigger Jets fan than Ira.
Forget about bigger. There's no more optimistic Jets fan than Ira.
Well, like, now he's
always positive.
And he's beaten down. But even he before the season said that as far as talent around Sam Darnold, there's a lot to be desired.
You know what, Rick? You know what? I, in my mind, I'm really in disbelief because I remember after that Monday night game against the Lions where Sam throws the pick six and it's the worst imaginable start for a young quarterback in his NFL career. And then he bounces back and the team has a blowout win. And I was like, man, Sam Darnold's so good. There's no way the Jets can ruin this kid.
Yep.
And Rick was like, don't say that. Don't say that. If any organization in the NFL could do it, it would be the Jets. And it feels like we're at that point right now because everybody in the fan base is clamoring. You're saying, you know what? We look bad enough. Maybe we'll go 0-16 and have the number one pick and we can draft Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's what everybody is looking forward to now. Like, it feels like fans are checked out on Sam Darnold and whether or not he's going to be able to pan out, whether or not he's going to be able to show signs this season. Feels like Jets fans now want the shiny new toy, which is Trevor Lawrence.
Yep, here is Sam Darnold. He's on the K-Show. He's on the K-Show every Monday, and he was on the K-Show yesterday following the loss on Sunday, and he discusses the fans being upset. Here he is, Sam Darnold from the K-Show.
We understand. The players are tired of it, too. You know, we don't like losing any more than anyone else. We're really close, man. We watch it, like I just said, we watch it every single Monday when we get back. We have yards that are out there on the field. We just got to go make the plays when they're there to be made. We got to take it one play at a time. We can't think, you know, any further than that. You know, if we just take it one play at a time, we do our job every single play, it really is that simple. And if we can do that, I think we'll be a really good team.
They're delusional. I mean, that's the only – that is
the only
thing.
What's he supposed to say?
Well, what's he supposed to say? That's fine. But what he is saying, he is repeating from what he heard from the coaching staff. It's exactly what Greg Williams said after week one. We were a couple plays away in that Buffalo game from being, you know, an elite defense. No, you weren't.
If that was the case – elite defense, there's not a piece of the team that looks good after 2 weeks. Not a piece. Nothing.
And they actually, the guys that stood out, I mean, Quentin Williams had a good game. I mean, Marcus May had a great week one. He was bad in week two.
Yes, he was bad.
First play of the game was an 80-yard toss untouched for a touchdown. In your building. And you were a couple plays away in that Buffalo game from being an elite defense? Come on, man.
You haven't had a lead. You haven't led one of these games. I mean, the Bengals led. The Giants have led. The Eagles led. I mean, you go around, the Panthers have led in a game. I mean, you go around, they haven't had a lead in 2 weeks yet.
You haven't been competitive, Dave. Forget a lead.
No.
You haven't been competitive.
But, I mean, the games, here's the thing. You watch the Jets game. You're 2 weeks in. By the end of the first quarter, it's over. Chris, you're playing 15 minutes of football, and by the time the first quarter's over twice now, you know that they have absolutely no chance to win this game.
Yeah, it seems like the games that they play are never in doubt. Like, the Buffalo Bills didn't feel threatened not once. I mean, even when Josh Allen has a fumble in the red zone late in the first half, like, they weren't even concerned with it. There was no urgency from them just because they knew that the Jets had no chance at being able to take advantage of their miscues. Like I said, against the Bills, man, it looked like the opposing team was practicing against the Jets. And they weren't worried about any mistakes that would come up because the Jets were so inept. Same thing with the 49ers. Had that been a different opponent, I'm not too sure that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play in the second half of that game. But because it's the Jets, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, they feel confident that they can get away with Nick Mullins going out there and playing one half of football and holding on to a win. Because it's the Jets. Like, I mean, if this was college football, the Jets would be the team you schedule for homecoming. Like, that's what this has turned into. They're the laughing stock of the NFL. Rich Cimini said it on Sunday. He's absolutely right. The Jets are the laughing stock, and I don't know how they get it turned around with this current regime.
Can they this year? Is there any chance that we get to the end of the year and it's like, well, you know what? It started out poorly. We didn't make the playoffs, but at least they righted the ship this season. Is there any chance of that?
Dave, how can you get things turned around when you don't have a head coach that's willing to admit the mistakes that he makes? You go back and ask him about the play calls that he has, and he says, you know what? I wouldn't change anything. If they execute better, it would work. How the hell does that sound to a player in that locker room when your head coach is saying, well, you know what? It's not my fault. The play calls are great. You guys just suck. That's what he's saying.
Which is amazing to me because you had the owner of the team say that, you know, your head coach is brilliant.
An offensive genius.
I mean, maybe it's just me, but I have higher expectations for someone that's a guru or brilliant.
Maybe the word genius means something different than I'm familiar with.
And maybe I'm confused because, yeah. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, people that are really good at their jobs, you usually, you know, I mean, you tend to see results, positive results. And yeah. I'm yet to see that.
You've seen almost nothing. Let's go to some of these calls. But
Dave, and I said this, I mean, before sports came back, period. I mean, we were talking about how important, you know, veteran leadership would be, how everyone would have to be, you know, self-starters, you know, teams with really, you know, really strong head coaches that could, you know, could get their guys, you know, ready to play, how important that would be. And right now, the Jets don't have any of that thing.
They don't have any of that stuff. They don't have anything right now. I mean, you know what? Becton looks like he's going to be a good player. Marcus May, I think, for the most part, is a pretty good player, although he struggled in week two. But you have almost nothing to be excited about with this team right now.
And what's the identity of the team? Who sets the tone? I mean, the guy who set the tone for your team is now in Seattle. And when you're devoid of leadership inside of that locker room, which this team clearly is, it's supposed to be your head coach that steps in. And takes on that role. And you're talking about head coach. You guys think I keep trying to tell you guys things you don't want to listen. He doesn't even speak to the team. He is a glorified offensive coordinator. That's what he is. And when all of a sudden you got to batten down the hatches because, you know, you're facing this kind of adversity, guys are supposed to be able to lean on their head coach. And right now, I don't know if they have a head coach.
No, they don't have a head coach, man. They don't have somebody that can be a leader of men. They just don't. Adam Gase has never proven himself that. All of the things that we hear about with his relationships with players are in a negative aspect. Like, I don't know that he has the ability to galvanize everybody in that building. And so if Adam Gase is not capable of doing that, this is not going to change.
Kent, do you think it's by chance that the New York Islanders just happen to be one of the most resilient
teams
in the NHL?
No, we know why. You make a change, you put the right GM and the right head coach in place, and all of a sudden, magically, things change? It's not magical. It's smart. It's what good teams do. It's what good ownership does.
Have you ever one time heard Adam Gase said, I need to be better?
Nope. I don't think he thinks he does.
No, I know he doesn't think he does. I mean, he thinks he's right 98% of the time.
But he's not right 98% of the time. He's not. He's not right 98% of the time. Matter of fact, he's more wrong than he is right. And I got the record to prove it. He's 30-36 as a head coach. That tells me what he's doing is not good enough.
It's those double-digit losses, too.
Well, they've lost, what, like 40% of his games by double digits? Something like that?
I think it was 29 of the 36 losses were by double digits.
Oh, so you're getting hammered.
Hammered.
Yeah.
Your team just quits.
Well, you know what? When you know that you have no chance to win, that's what happens. Let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to this is not the original Andy from Merrick. It's the other Andy from Merrick if you're scoring at home. Andy, other Andy from Merrick, you're on 98.7.
Guys, I'm like, you know, like the Ray's Pizza in New York, like famous Ray's and original Ray's.
Do you know Andy from Merrick?
No, I think we bumped into each other. We might cancel each other out and disappear from the universe. So.
Yeah. And in 2020, that just might happen today. Go ahead, Andy.
Right. So I have some coping skills for you, Rico. I'm a longtime and long-suffering Jets fan. And a number of years ago, I decided that instead of at the beginning of the season having hope that they were going to do well this year, and like, oh, I'm going to predict 8-9 wins. Oh, maybe they can even win 10 games this year. We can go to the playoffs. Every year before the season, I, in my head, think this team will win 3 games this year. And I'm rarely disappointed. Now, this year...
You might be disappointed this season, Andy.
Yeah, this year I think I might be disappointed. But rarely am I disappointed. And now I can watch the Jets knowing full well that they will probably lose almost every week. They'll be a terrible team, bottom of the pops instead of top of the pops. They'll stink. And now I can just be entertained by the ineptitude and like the three-ring circus that is the New York Jets because they're a terrible organization.
I can't live like that. But I can't live like that.
Nor should you. Andy, that's a terrible way to live.
No, it isn't. It's great because now I can be happy all the way through football season instead of being absolutely miserable in week two, knowing that I have 15 more weeks of feeling like, oh, my God, this is the worst thing of all time, this stupid Jets team ruining my life again. It doesn't ruin my life anymore.
You know what the worst part is? Yeah, I'll tell you what the worst part is. And, you know, Dave, I think you felt this way over the last couple of years with your Giants. When you get late in the season and you start focusing more on the draft pick than actually winning games, and you start rooting against your team.
You know that's what – I mean, I was on the edge of my seat against Washington last year in a game that I wanted them to lose. When the Giants won the toss in overtime, I was like, oh, come on. And then they went down and scored that touchdown. Like, you know you're hitting rock bottom when you're actually actively rooting for your team to lose. And you look at the season saying, I mean, let's be fair. You're 2 weeks into the year, and there's not a Jets fan out there that has any modicum of hope. That's a loss.
Yeah, but
season.
It's not. But here's the problem, though. It's not about draft picks. It's about your head coach. You're now at a point, and the Jets fan base hates this coach so much that they're almost now rooting for their team to lose so he gets fired. I mean, that's the definition of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks which may happen, by the way. If I don't think you have to root very hard for this team to lose.
No, I know, but why would you? You only get 16 of these things. Why? I mean, why would you want to be in that spot after two games? You wouldn't be.
Because
that's
so
not
angry.
A great place to be as a fan base.
Because they're angry, and I get it. I mean, it's a fan base that has seen enough. It's enough is enough. I mean, you've been bad for a decade now. It's 10 years of bad football. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but where's the silver lining, though? I mean, if that does happen,
I don't think
he gets
there is
fired
any.
During the season. Like, who all of a sudden is going to step in and help develop Sam? And then if you are the worst team in the league, and you do have the first overall pick, now what do you do?
They're going to draft Trevor Lawrence and parachute him into the same exact situation that Sam Darnold was put in 3 years ago. The only difference being that you hope that you have a regime that's all on board with developing the young quarterback this time around. That would be it. That would be the only difference if you were to go the direction of drafting another young quarterback.
See, I don't get how you look around the NFL as a general manager, and I get this was his first offseason, and see what every single one of these other teams is doing for the young quarterbacks. How much better Josh Allen looks with Stephon Diggs. How much better Kyler Murray looks with DeAndre Hopkins. And think to yourself, you know what? These are good pieces around Sam Darnold. This is exactly what he needs to take that next step.
But you know what? Then you got to blame Joe Douglas for that.
But let me say this. I don't think that Joe Douglas looks around and says he has good pieces for Sam, but I think he acknowledges that there's only so much he can do in one offseason, and his priority was fixing the offensive line. He was saying, okay, I've told his kid's parents that I'm going to do everything I can to protect their son. Let me go out here and put together an offensive line. Now, to his credit, seems like he's hit on Mekhi Becton as the left tackle. Looks like you got a guy that'll be there for the next decade plus. The offensive line is going to be a work in progress. Just because we haven't seen OTAs, we haven't seen any preseason games, it was going to take some time for them to be able to gel, right? We knew that. But that was his priority, and the weapons around Sammy didn't necessarily feel like he had the flexibility under their cap to be able to go out and do those things.
Yeah, but he's not
stupid.
And
preserve opportunities to do things in future off seasons.
Yeah, but my point is he's not stupid, right? In the fact that he actually came out and said that he was offended that people thought this team was going to stink. Like, he's looking at the talent. Like, if Jamison Crowder, and he's, I mean, listen, I like Jamison Crowder, but if that's the guy that you're going to rely on to help your young quarterback, like, that's saying something. So, I mean,
see, you look at that comment differently than I do, man. I feel like that was very tongue in cheek. The general manager trying to set the tone for the season, trying to support his team, trying to support his head coach. But Joe Douglas ain't stupid. He was in Philly. He was in Baltimore. He knows what a good team looks like. And he knows that the Jets ain't a good team, which is why he wanted a 6-year contract. Like, this was going to take some time. But I think the biggest question that Joe Douglas has to ask himself and answer at some point in this football season is whether or not he has a head coach. And if he doesn't, then he needs to start thinking about who the next head coach of the New York Jets is going to be.
Yeah, but that's
before he thinks
point,
about
though.
Who the quarterback is going to be.
But that's my point. Is Joe Douglas is a smart guy. He comes from really good organizations, Baltimore, Philly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he realizes going into the season, especially in New York, that the most important thing for this team moving forward is to develop Sam Darnold, to see Sam Darnold take that next step. So, I mean, it doesn't take you know, Chris Canty, who's won a Super Bowl, to look at the wide receivers and the skill position players and say, you know what, these aren't great. Like, this is...
They're
this is
putrid,
not exactly
is what they
okay,
are. They're
unless,
putrid.
So, okay, so if Chris can see that, I can see that, you can see that, Joe Douglas can see that. The only reason Joe Douglas would buy into this is enough is if his head coach was telling him he could make it work. Do you have enough? Yeah, this is good. This is what I need. I have enough.
How could he possibly then he I mean, we're,
because
we're
it's about the system
with
him.
This is enough?
Because he's a genius, Dave. And it's about the system. It's about the X's and O's, not the Jimmy and Joe's.
I don't know, man. I give up.
The plays are right.
I give up.
The plays are always perfect. It's the players that screw it up.
Yeah. Well,
that's,
you know what?
Crazy.
If you don't have,
that's wild to me that a coach would actually come out and say that. That's wild. Like, no accountability whatsoever. Like, none of this is on him.
It's all on him. But here's the thing, Dave. It's all on him.
But that's the point, Dave. Every head coach that I've played for, college and pro, like, when you go out there on game day, the coaches say the mistakes are mine. Go out there and play. If you go out there and you make a mistake in the game, that's my fault for not preparing you better the week leading up to the game. This dude, when we talk about the games and the play calls and all the situations he puts his guys in, that's on them. That's not on him. That's crazy to me. Like, I cannot even fathom that. Like, if I'm a guy in that locker room, that is driving me mad that my head coach is doubling and tripling down on the decisions that he's make in terms of play calling, sequencing, and game management. That is crazy to me.
You got 14 more games to go. All right, so Mike Tannenbaum's going to join us at 10, CMT on a Tuesday. And then tomorrow you have Knob Observations. It's a busy week for you. The middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, CMT, Knob Observations, and then CMT again on Thursday. That's a tall order for you, Rick.
Yeah, this is when I'm meant to really step my game up and shine.
Yes. Mondays, Fridays, you know, leave the heavy lifting to us. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we look to you.
Well, we all know I couldn't handle a Friday. I had to make my picks on a Friday. I couldn't handle doing a CMT.
You did well this week, though. What'd you go, 2-1?
Right. 2-1, yeah.
It's a good week.
Chris, I think you went 2-1 also.
I believe that's correct, David.
Yeah, and I went 1-2.
Yeah, you got screwed. I mean, that Steelers game.
With what, the Pittsburgh game?
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Those are the worst.
Yep, that's what happened. But that's why you don't gamble.
Yeah, but you love it.
No, well, you know.
You love it.
Doing the bets with you guys.
I would actually like the sound too when you made your Kansas City pick. Oh, 8.5. It's Kansas City.
I couldn't have been more wrong on that. I could listen. You took Philadelphia.
I know.
That's a good point, Dave.
And I'm not sitting here beating you Touché. Up over it. If every game that I loved, I won.
RJ Bell took Philly.
I'd be a millionaire.
RJ Bell took Philly in his picks too,
and they got crushed.
They got destroyed. Yeah,
they're not a good team. They have major problems there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't understand how Carson Wentz looked so good at the end of last season.
He's going backwards.
I mean, it has not looked good at all.
He's going bad. I mean, apparently it's Philly Sports Talk Radio that they're clamoring for Jalen Hurts to start games now.
Yeah, but that Philly offensive line is really bad too. And bad offensive line play typically lends itself to your quarterback struggling a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to put it all on the group up front, but that offensive line ain't what it's been in years past.
No. Well, they're not going to be, right? I mean, Brooks is out for the season. Dillard's out for the season.
The Eagles have turned into the New York Yankees in the NFL with the amount of injuries. And it doesn't stop.
Yeah, no, they haven't.
San Francisco kind of takes that mantle, though, don't they, though?
I mean, the 49ers
are ravaged with
injuries. But I mean, last year the Eagles were decimated, and somehow, some way, they found a way to make the playoffs. I mean,
I see where you're going.
And you're like, it can't be that bad this year. Oh, yeah, it can.
Oh, yeah.
It actually can be.
It sure can. Yeah. Let's go to Ira, Staten Island. What's up, Ira? How are you?
Hey, good morning, Dave. You know, I tell you, you're going into the season. I wasn't blind here. I knew what the deal was. Like Chris said, he could only do so much. He appears to have fixed the offensive line. But the thing that I have a problem with is that they are so uncompetitive. And they show no fire. It's a reflection on the coach. You have players yesterday saying they don't practice hard. I mean, how do players say that after week two? After week 10, if you're 3-7, I could understand that. I've never heard that after week two. So just going forward, listen, you know there's going to be changes. And I'm just trying to understand what Douglas is trying to do. We're going to end up with Sam at the end of the year. We're going to question whether we're going to go forward with him, or if we're in a position to take Trevor Lawrence, they're going to go in that position. That's a decision Douglas has to make. So since they got this so messed up, and you got Sam in his third year, and you still don't have to pay him, but they're not ready to win, you wonder if Douglas really isn't sold on him, okay? And he doesn't.
You reset the money.
Right, you reset the money, and you're basically getting a restart. You're getting a quarterback on a rookie deal next year. You got a ton of money you're carrying over to cap space, and you got a boatload of picks. And my money is, I mean, I'm rooting for Sam. I want him to be my quarterback. But if he can't take that next step, all right, whether it's the coaching, whether it's him, whatever it is, if Douglas decides to go in a different direction, I think that's probably the right business move if Sam doesn't show any improvement.
Yeah, but that's why for me, and maybe that's been his mindset the entire time, is you know, I'm not 100% sold on Sam Darnold, and, you know, I'll save my money, get all these draft picks, and we can do a restart. But, I mean, the point you just made is that, you know, by the time we get to the end of the season, if the team, you know, looks this bad, Sam hasn't taken a step, Joe Douglas didn't draft him, they can reset the money, they have a high enough draft pick where it could be Trevor Lawrence, it could be Justin Fields, whoever it ends up being, would show to me this is exactly why this season you should have went out and made a move that would have helped your young quarterback.
Agree.
Like, this would have been the year to go get a DeAndre Hopkins. Like, to
there
actually get
real,
some
there
answers.
Were real talented guys available, and you did nothing.
But it's exactly right, why it's exactly why Jerry Jones went and got Amari Cooper. I need to find out if Dak Prescott can be my quarterback or not. Who does Sam have that they can? I mean,
he has nobody.
I mean, how many times do I have to listen to? You're talking about. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Aaron Rodgers one of the most talented quarterbacks in the history of the sport?
100%.
Yes.
100%.
And they're complaining he doesn't have enough weapons. He's got Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, and he doesn't have enough weapons. How come they didn't draft a receiver? What the hell does... If he doesn't have enough weapons, what the hell does Sam have?
He has nothing. He's working
he has
on
nothing
right now.
He has nothing. And Ira, thanks for the call. Rick, he has nothing. I mean, we've gone through this. The Jets are the worst team in football, period. The Jets' skill position players are the worst in football, period. Like, these are not even up for debate. These are facts 2 weeks into the season. And not only do they have the worst skill position players, now they're hurt. So you're the worst of the worst, and now what you have, which isn't even very good, isn't even capable of playing. Le'Veon, not going to play for a while. Rashard Perryman, not going to play for a while. I mean, it's incredible what's going on right now.
But I'm just confused, though. I'm confused. Like, I don't understand, and maybe it was tongue-in-cheek, how your GM, who's a smart guy that's come from winning organizations, can say, I'm offended with how bad people think we're going to be. Look at what you have. You got no Mosley, no Adams. You got, I mean, you name the weapon on the offensive side of the ball. A brand-new offensive line that was going to clearly take some time to gel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could you look at that and be upset that people thought you were going to be bad? You're bad. You're not a good team.
No. No, you're not. But how could they?
Yeah, but
what I don't understand, why would you play the game? Why would you put on the charade of, I mean, a very insulted that people think we're going to be bad? It's plain as day that you're going to be bad. Why not own it and say, you know, we're in the midst of a rebuild, so be patient with us?
You
I thought the New York fans, Chris, would have a lot easier time of dealing with that.
No, but Jets fans don't want to hear that, though, Dave. Jets fans don't want to hear that we're still rebuilding. Like,
but don't people want to hear the truth?
Perpetual rebuild for the last decade. Jets fans don't want to hear that. So I get what Joe Douglas was trying to do. He was trying to put the chip on his team's shoulder and try to support the head coach that's responsible for him getting the job. But that's why I look at this whole situation with the Jets big picture, and I think Sam is going to be the collateral damage from missteps by the organization. There was no reason for Chris Johnson to run out and hire Adam Gase right after he was fired by the Miami Dolphins, but he did. And as a result of that, you ended up moving on from Mike Maccagnan after he put you in position to draft Sam, and he spent all of this money, $100 million in cap space on free agents. Like, those were all mistakes that were made by Chris Johnson and the Jets organization, and as a result, you didn't put the infrastructure in place or the right infrastructure that was going to be able to support a young quarterback, and now you got people in the fan base that are clamoring to move on from Sam if you got a chance to draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields. That's where you're at. So whether or not Sam Darnold is actually a good NFL player is irrelevant to what the Jets are going to do. If Sam can't prove that he is a bona fide star in this league by the end of this year, which is likely that he doesn't.
How can he?
Then the Jets are going to move on from him.
How can he possibly show that he's a bona fide star?
But that's
league.
My point, Dave. You can't even get the answer to a question about the player because you can't evaluate him properly based on the circumstances and the head coach he has. You don't know if you have a head coach. How the hell are you going to find out you got a good quarterback? Like in that special with Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick says it plain as day. Good players can't overcome bad coaching. We already seen Adam Gase is not a good coach. This is fifth year in the NFL. Everybody around the NFL that covers the sport, that analyzes it, says Adam Gase ain't a good coach. Well, with the exception of Mike Tannenbaum, but that's another story. But everybody says it. So how are you going to be able to get an evaluation on Sam if you don't have a good head coach? You can't. And so if you keep having the question on whether or not he's the guy, there's no way that Joe Douglas is going to have the type of draft capital that it looks like the Jets are going to afford him based on the season they're going to have. There's no way he's going to have a top five pick and decide that he's not going to use it on one of those quarterbacks coming out. No way. No.
He's gonna use a quarterback, and they're going to move on and start from scratch with a new head coach.
Dave, you know who the biggest Jets fan in the world is now? He actually just supplanted Ira as the biggest Jets fan in the world.
I hope it's not going to be
Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
He wants the Jets to win as many games as possible.
Don't keep losing. But you know how Jets would it be to go like win two of your last three games and wind up with the third pick in the draft?
Well, I'm sitting here trying to figure out why we're surprised. I mean, we're already talking about Trevor Lawrence. I mean, I said this at the start of the season. If, God forbid, they got off to a slow start, we took phone calls last year about if the Jets should draft Tua. This is no different. I mean, it looks awful.
But now it's real. Like, now it's tangible. Now
it's real. But so was the 1-7 start. Your season was over.
I know, but you weren't going to take a new quarterback after 2 years. After three and three dreadful seasons, I think it's realistic to think that they would take a new quarterback.
I want to know who lied to Joe Douglas and said, hey, Joe, this is good. I'm telling you, they're sleeping on us. We're not going to be nearly as bad as everyone thinks.
Got to be the coach, no? Who else could
it be? It would have to be. Joe Douglas is too smart to be offended that people thought they were going to be bad.
Yeah, but Joe Douglas is also too smart to believe anything that Adam Gase is saying in terms of they're sleeping on us. Come on, man. Come on. Joe Douglas knows better than that.
I hope he does.
Rick, you know it's true because he demanded that he have a six-year contract. He's like, I'm not taking a job unless I get a six-year contract. He ain't crazy. He knew what he was looking at. And he probably also knew that there might be some truth to the rumors about Adam Gase.
It's bad. We're 2 weeks in, guys, and it is really, really bad. All right, are you ready for Andy from Eric? Are you guys ready to roll with some NBA questions?
Can I give you some breaking news quickly, though?
Is it legitimate breaking news?
I mean, it's fairly legitimate. Okay. It's right up Canty's.
Go ahead.
Here we go, Canty. I hope you're ready for this. Are you sitting down? I hope so.
I'm sitting down. What we got, my friend?
I got Heisman watch. I got the top.
Oh, dear.
Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Spencer Rattler, Sam Ehlinger, Derek King, and Travis Etienne. Round out your top six right now.
There you go. Okay.
Heisman watch.
So five quarterbacks and a running back. Is that what I just got there?
You have, five quarterbacks and running back. Correct.
Yep. Sounds
and if, I guess if you go to Oklahoma, there's a strong possibility you'll be in contention for the
You're already
Heisman.
In. Mm-hmm. You're already in contention.
If you go now, is it, is it, did I get that right? Is it Derek King?
I don't know. The quarterback from Miami, right?
Derek King. Derek.
Derek King.
Yeah.
He's good. He played well on
Saturday.
He's
good. He's real good.
All right, here we go. Andy from Merrick. We'll see what you got. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. You are right, Dave. It is a NBA Tuesday. And since 99's Lakers are pushing forward towards the title, I got four questions about the current roster.
Okay.
Here we go.
Starting with three guys on the current Lakers went straight from high school to the pros. Can you name them?
Dwight, LeBron, and who would be the Dwight, LeBron? J.R.
Smith. J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
CeCe, my man. Question number two. The current roster has two Kentucky Wildcats on it. Name them.
Rondo, Anthony Davis.
AD.
There you go. Two for two. In this abbreviated season, both LeBron and AD have exceeded 1,600 points for the season. Who ranks third on the team in scoring this year with 782?
782.
Do you think it's Kuzma?
Could be Kuzma. How many points did
Yeah, it's
Kuz.
It's Kuz. It's got to be Kuz.
Yeah.
It's got to be Kuz. Three for three. All right. Speaking of Kuzma, he wears jersey number 0. Can you tell me which current Laker wears the highest uniform number?
Markieff Morris.
The well-traveled Markieff Morris is correct.
Double eights.
And there we go.
Guys, stay healthy as always.
All right. Thank you, Andy from Eric. When you do that, well,
that's my kind. That's my kind of trivia right there.
Just changes the whole complexion of the day when you do well with Andy questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just
yeah. But that was soft toss relevant. Today from Andy.
It's okay.
Yeah, he wasn't coming in high and tight.
It's fine.
He can tell you're nervous.
You know, tomorrow's hockey, and God knows what happens then.
He can tell Canty's nervous about Garrett Cole's start tonight.
And rightfully so.
I mean, man, stop making. Listen, I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
This is an important start for Garrett Cole.
This is a big
one. Rick, I'm not wrong.
This is a big one.
I'm not wrong, damn it.
Garrett Cole gets shelled tonight.
Stand by it.
You'll be looking for Canty right next door. He'll be living in the same place as Ray Finkel is.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine if he gives you like 4 1/3 of 6 runs? Forget it.
Oh, done.
Canty will call out tomorrow. He will call out tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Laces out.
I'm in Psychoville and Finkel's the mayor.
How good was DeGrom last night? Poor Jacob DeGrom, huh?
14
strikeouts, can't get no run support.
None. He was.
They don't like Jacob DeGrom. I'm resigning myself to the fact that the Mets lineup does not like Jacob DeGrom. I don't know what he did to him, but they don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, it's to the point now where it's just sad. I mean, it really is.
It's unbelievable. Every start he gives you is dominant. And still, his ERA, 2 runs in 7 innings, went up last night. Unfortunately, and I really do care.
That last start killed him. That last start killed him.
What did he go, two innings?
3 runs.
Yeah, 3 runs.
Yeah, that one in Philly,
and he wasn't right, which is really unfortunate. Right. But I don't, unless he gives you, he's going to go again this weekend, right? Unless he gives you a great outing, I don't see how he's going to win the Cy Young again.
No, I don't think so either.
Right? Which kind of stinks. And he's so good.
No, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's the
best.
We
don't deserve him, to be honest with you. The Mets,
yes,
the Wilpons, the Mets don't deserve him.
We do.
You and I do. Him. But the Wilpons don't.
I saw your tweet. Another great deal by Brody.
Oh, my God. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, the trades that he made were just mind-boggling.
It's unbelievable. Like, he's giving away legitimate prospects.
Yeah, guys that are now pitching in the major leagues that he just gave away for nothing.
Guys, stop being so negative, man. You're not going to have to deal with Brody or the Wilpons
anymore.
Very soon.
It's true. It's positive. You know, we bring him in, Mike Tenenbaum, our resident general manager. There's so much to do, and New York football really is a disaster right now. Mike, we welcome you in. I know you're hydrated and healthy, and we say good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, guys. Good to be with you.
All right, so let's start with the Giants. We'll get to the Jets. There's a lot of real positivity we'll bring to the show today. I mean, the Barkley injury, it's so destructive. You thought he was going to be the bell cow this year. He's not going to be, obviously. I guess the question is, does this change anything future-wise for the Giants? Do you think they still look internally and say, this is our running back of the future, or year three wiped out, we don't know what he'll be year four, that it's now kind of a wait-and-see approach as far as Barkley's concerned?
You know, Dave, I don't think there's any getting away from the fact that this guy is immensely talented, high character. I thought he was going to really respond well to the criticism about his pass protection. And it does go to the, you know, what we've been talking about, this classical, do you pay the running back discussion? And we just saw recently Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey get paid, Dalvin Cook get paid. But this is a little bit of a cautionary tale. And, you know, we've seen other guys, as we've discussed, Todd Gurley, Devontae Freeman, David Johnson signed these lucrative deals, and then they move on to other teams. So if I was the Giants, and I kind of put this out there on social, which is I unfortunately have a lot of experience with this, it's really going to take him 2 years to get back to being the same player that he was.
So you're looking at year five. That's great. Mike, I guess the biggest question for a Giants fan would be, what does this do for Daniel Jones? Like, how negative is the effect this has on Daniel Jones moving forward?
You know, Rick, for me, this is an opportunity. You want to be a franchise quarterback, you elevate everybody. Greatness is defined by how you impact others. You want this to be your team. Eli graduated. Saquon's not available. You're the guy, you know, and everyone's going to look to you. When they look to your left, look to your right. You know, Coach Parcells used to put it best. We're looking for a battlefield commander. We're not looking for somebody that's worrying about their brand. We're not somebody that's interested in their clicks and their Twitter followers. We want somebody that could be a battlefield commander. So, the pen is in your hand. What kind of script do you want to write? So if I'm Daniel Jones, I see this as an opportunity.
Mr. T, with no Saquon Barkley, you have to adjust the expectations for the Giants in the way of wins and losses. But I guess my question to you would be, what characterizes a successful season for Big Blue?
Yeah, you know, Chris, to me, like, they have to get much better on third down. Like, when you go back to the game against Chicago, I thought on both sides of the ball, their weaknesses showed up. They couldn't get off the field on third down. Leonard Williams, to me, is a consequential player for them. He has to play better. He has to be a guy that could generate some pressure. You know, we know their secondary is going to struggle. And on the other side of the ball, they're going to have to figure out a way to convert. And they have players. They have Evan Ingram and Deion Lewis. Those should be third down players for them. But they have to get that fixed. And if they do that, I think they'll be, you know, more competitive. I would throw the record out, Chris. I think there's ways that we could see if their young players are getting better. I think there's a number of good young players on that team.
So what do you think ultimately, Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN, the Giants do this season at running back? Do they bring in Freeman? Is it a Gallman, maybe Freeman, Deion Lewis combination? Is there a bell cow, or is it just ride the hot hand game in and game out?
Yeah, and it's interesting with someone like Devontae Freeman, because he is a very talented back, but let's face it, like going to the playoffs is going to be, you know, an uphill battle for them. So to me, I would try to play as many of those young players and develop them for the future. And this is when you want to be scouring the waiver wire, looking at other teams' practice squads, and see if you can find like another young running back that could be part of the future after the season. But no doubt Freeman could come in, at least, you know, stay the ship. He's a very productive, talented back.
Yeah, but Mike, it feels like the Giants, and you're probably right, but I feel like the Giants are going to try to their best to, you know, to continue to develop Daniel Jones and protect their young quarterback, give him the weapons he needs, unlike the New York Jets. So here's my question, and be honest. When you looked at this Jets team before the season even started, before the atrocities we've seen in week one and week two, did you look at the offensive side of the ball and think that Sam Darnold had enough to have the kind of success that he needed to this season?
I thought when you think about Le'Veon Bell, Jamerson Crowder in particular, and maybe the development of Chris Herndon, I thought they could have been at least a middle-of-the-pack team as it relates to offense. Now, to me, Rick, when you go back to that game on Sunday, to me, the bigger issue is, like, what happened on the first play of the game? And here's what I mean specifically. The Shanahans, Kyle and Mike Shanahan, for 30 years, have been around the league known as an outside zone toss running team. And on the very first play of the game, Raheem Mostert goes 80 yards for a touchdown and not touched. And, Chris, you know this as a former player. Everything going on that sidelines are, like, do we have confidence in the game plan? Like, are we prepared to play? And that, to me, was, look, Sam Darnold is not perfect by any stretch. But when you go back to that game, their first six possessions are touchdown, punt, touchdown, touchdown, field goal. That's hard to win if you have Johnny Unitas on the other side of the field.
Mr. T, Adam Gase defended the decision that he made in the third quarter, down three scores, to kick a field goal and still be down three scores as opposed to going for it on 4th and 7. Do you feel like that was a misstep by him to try to double down on the decision that he made?
Yeah, Chris, you know, after post-game press conferences are tough for any losing head coach in the league, especially in New York. So knowing Adam the way I do, no one's going to be more critical on himself than he will be. And he'll look back at that and say, you know, was that the right decision? And he'll learn from that. But look, that was surely a smaller bump in the road. They got to get their defense, to me. Like, that's, if they could at least get slow down the other side, that'll give their offense a chance to have some margin for error. But right now, Sam Darnold's going to have to play perfect. And, you know, look, they're devastated at receivers with injuries. And I'm not making excuses. They do have to play better, but I was much more alarmed by how that defense started the game.
But, Mike, I guess I asked that question because, yeah, the defense needs to play better and the offense needs to be better, but I think you also have to look at the head coach and say that he needs to be better. If Adam Gase isn't willing to take accountability for the mistakes that he makes in the games, how can he expect the players to do so?
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think Adam, one of the things he does, whether it's right or wrong, is he really compartmentalizes messages. And I've seen him, you know, again, I was with him for 3 years in Miami, get up in front of the team and said, hey, I should have done X or Y better. So I've seen him hold himself accountable, and whether or not we think it's appropriate, he tends not to do that publicly, but he does that with his team.
But he's doing that in the media. He's doing the opposite of that. In the media, is spinning it as, okay, the guys have got to execute better. The players need to be better. I wouldn't change any of my play calls. They just need to play better. I mean, to me, that doesn't sound like a head coach that's willing to take responsibility for the product that we're seeing on the field Sunday, each week in, week out.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Again,
I don't want my head coach to do it behind closed doors. I mean, if you're going to talk about your faults behind closed doors, why can't you do it in the media?
Yeah, no, Chris, that's fair. Again, I've just seen his style where he wants to keep family business, and he talks about things internally where, again, I've seen him say things like, I have to do better. And, again, your point's well taken that maybe he should share more of that through the, you know, publicly, but especially in the New York market. But that's just not something that, you know, he's typically done in his career.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I heard you say it yesterday. I heard the sound of it, and I just want to kind of ask you again and expand on the question a little bit. If the Jets do wind up with a disaster of a season, it feels like we're heading in that direction. They wind up with the number one pick. Is it even a debate for you? Like, is it with unequivocally Trevor Lawrence? Is that even a front office conversation in your mind? Is he just far and away the better prospect than Sam Darnold? Is there any way you could be convinced of, you know what, maybe you get a haul for that pick and you trade out of it? Or is it just clearly Lawrence at the number one spot?
Yeah, so just to put context around what you're saying, Dave, like we're a million miles away, right?
I understand.
Jacksonville was on the clock. You know, now they look like the surprise team of the season. So, yes, I think Trevor Lawrence should be the first pick in the draft, regardless of whoever has that pick, including the Jets. Now, look, we'll see a lot more of Sam Darnold over the next 14 weeks, but I see Trevor Lawrence much better than the last three number one picks, Kyle Murray, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow. I see him a lot like Andrew Luck. I think he's a generational talent, and whoever unfortunately has to have the first pick, they could turn their franchise around for the next 10 years because I see greatness in him, and I think he's the absolute no-brainer first pick overall.
Yeah, unless the Jets find a way to ruin him too, which they have a long history of doing. Mike Tannenbaum joins us here in the show. Speaking of young stud quarterbacks, Mike, how hard would it be for you as the general manager of the Los Angeles Chargers to see what you saw from Justin Herbert in week two and go back to Tyrod Taylor as your starting quarterback?
Yeah, and as you guys know, I've liked Justin Herbert for the last 2 years. I think he's a young Ben Roethlisberger, and you know, we're in a win business, and it's unfair maybe how it happened, but you got to play the best players. And again, you know, Chris, we've talked about this before. In our sport, the locker room is going to hold the coaching staff and the front office accountable, and they want to win. And, you know, Herbert was not perfect. He made a really bad interception, but, boy, there was a lot of good things. And if we're in the business of playing the best players, I'm playing Herbert.
Mr. T, through 2 weeks of the regular season, we have 11 undefeated teams and we've got 11 winless teams. Who's the team that's not as good as their start might suggest, and who's the team that's better than starting 0-2?
Yeah, to me, those are pretty easy. I think Chicago is nowhere close to being a 2-0 team, and they're maybe three or four plays away. It's certainly a DeAndre Swift drop for being at least 1-1, so I don't see much really improvement in Trubisky, maybe a little bit. That throw to Anthony Miller on opening day was a really good throw outside the numbers, down the field. That was an NFL throw. You know, 0-2, probably Houston just because, you know, I believe in Deshaun Watson, but, you know, there's a number of things they have to get cleaned up. But, you know, in fairness, you know, they started off with Kansas City and Baltimore. So just based on their schedule alone, Chris, I would put Houston in that conversation.
All right, we have a great game this Monday night. I mean, you could argue game of the year. Chiefs and Ravens, we'll have it on ESPN. I mean, I know it's early. I know we're still 6 days before, but we're not going to speak to you again before that game. Where do you go in this one, Kansas City and Baltimore?
You know, Dave, it was a normal sort of, like, environment. I would say Baltimore because the place would just be popping. But, you know, home field just isn't the same right now with the pandemic. And, you know, I think is that not a good description, Rick?
No, I think he appreciates you using the word popping.
I loved it. This is why you're the best.
The other words, Ricky. So that's why I think Kansas City is the better team. If they play 10 times, I think Kansas City wins 6 or 7. Of the 10, but it should be a great game. And, you know, I think it could be a little bit like the New England-Seattle game where, hey, 4th and 1, let's put the ball on the 1 yard line. Here comes Cam Newton. You know, one team wins, one team loses. And I'd love to see a similar ending with either Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. It should be a great game.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. I'm going to actually ask you about the game we saw last night. Dave likes to jump forward a week. How concerned are you with Drew Brees and this New Orleans offense?
I am, and I put something out this morning. Like, his yards per attempt is like at historically low numbers. Now, look, they didn't have Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas may be the best receiver in the sport, and let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But here's the problem, Rick. If Drew Brees can't get the ball down the field, and I know that, trust me, the opposing defensive coordinator knows that. And what happens is, and again, Rex Ryan and Eric Mangini, some of the really smart defensive guys I've worked with, that compresses the field, and now all of a sudden those windows get smaller and smaller. So that some stats don't tell a story. That one does, in my opinion. And if I'm a Saints fan, I'm very concerned that Breeze can't get the ball down the field.
Mike, I want to go back to the game on Sunday night between the Seahawks and the Patriots. In week one, Cam Newton impressed us with the way that he was able to, you know, be a part of that rush offense from the Patriots. But on Sunday, I mean, the guy put on an aerial show. I can't remember the last time I seen Cam Newton with that kind of zip on his passes. What did you see from Cam that makes him so much better than the Cam Newton we saw in the last couple of years down in Carolina?
Yeah, I think it's a number of things, Chris. I think it's health. I think having a year off really helped him from getting his body right. And again, I think we're going to be talking about the comeback player of the year. I think New England's going to win the division. I think we're going to be talking in the next couple of weeks amongst us guys about, hey, when's that Cam Newton extension going to get done? Mm-hmm. And he looks like the same player he was a couple of years ago. And I think what's so hard now is if you're playing New England, they don't have great weapons on the outside, but he's getting the ball with accuracy and timing. Like, that passing game looked really crisp, and it's only going to get better, again, with the lack of reps due to the pandemic. And maybe it's New England. You know, we're talking about the Giants picking up a back for Saquon Barkley. Maybe it's, you know, New England picking up Allen Robinson, let's say, or some other frontline receiver to try to get them over the hump. You know, they
Odell.
Did that a year ago with Muhammad. Yeah, boy, that'd be interesting. You know, they tried that a year ago with Mohamed Sanu. Obviously, that one didn't work out. So I'm really encouraged by Cam Newton. I love those stories. It's redemptive. You know, a guy humbled himself, took very little money, bet on himself. Like, to me, that's what sports is all about.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You've been pretty ardent about not loving Josh Allen. He looks unbelievable 2 weeks into the season. Now, granted, it's the Jets in Miami. Are you changing your tune at all with the young quarterback?
Yeah. I would say he's improving. He's making some of the throws that he had not made in the past, Dave, but I'm still, you know, I think there's a lot of room for improvement. He missed some throws that Russell Wilson doesn't miss, Aaron Rodgers doesn't miss, so it's better. It's still not where it needs to be, and he's played well. He made some big-time throws against Miami in a very tough divisional game, but I like him. I don't love him.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. The segment's been popping, by the way, Mike. last one for me, potentially. You know, Dave believes that the AFC is loaded. I believe the NFC
You know what, Mike? I said the AFC is loaded. I think Pittsburgh's terrific.
I think
Baltimore's terrific. I think Kansas City's terrific. I do. I think Buffalo has a chance to be very, very good. I think the top of the AFC is loaded, yes.
Could I ask my
Stand
question,
by
please?
It. No, okay. I'm sick of me. You're making fun of him with popping. You're making fun of me with the AFC loaded. You got Chris with Garrett Cole. You're making fun of everybody today.
All right, so here's the question. Mike, when you look at the NFC, which I believe is a little bit deeper than the AFC, are the Seattle Seahawks the best team right now in the NFC?
I think so. I think they have the best player in the sport, and so I would say yes. Now, their pass rush has some flaws to it, but there's a lot to like about them.
Mike, is Gardner Minshew a true franchise quarterback, or is he always going to be one of those starters that you're looking to replace?
Yeah, I think we got to trust our eyes on that one, Chris. And he's played way better than I expected, and good for him. And we'll, you know, Miami has a good defense, and that game is Thursday night, Miami and Jacksonville. We'll know more about Minshew, but boy, you talk about compelling stories. Cam Newton's number one, but you know, Jacksonville is, they're going to be a tougher out than people think. You know, they beat Indy. He threw one incompletion, and they brought Tennessee all the way down to the wire.
Mike, you're using words like popping. You sound really energized and kind of reinvigorated. is something going on? Are you on like an energy drink or something this week?
Yeah. Well, it's all natural, Dave. It's X2 Performance. Go to the website, x2performance.com. It's all natural. It's clean. It's healthy. I use it every day. I know a lot of professional players use it in a couple different sports. So, guys, check it out. You'll like it. It's natural. There's no crash, no jitter. So check it out.
All right, Rick. Do you have one more? I don't want to.
No, he's the best. I mean, he's said it all. He's done it all today.
He really has.
This is why he's my favorite. I love him.
Yep. You are certainly on our.
You say that to every guest, Rick, but
I don't. Dave, do I say that to every guest?
No, he does not. There's a few that we really love. There are a few we love. We love Paul Feinbaum. You're also in that category. We're big fans of you.
Well, I like that. Paul's pretty good. That's a very high threshold. So
how's the Sunday morning show going with Chris and Anita? Be honest.
Well, I would say ask Chris to evaluate me. You know, I felt like I started off as like, you know, just as a replacement player, you know, like the expanded rosters with COVID this year. So hopefully, like, I'm earning my spot, you know?
Chris, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about it. Love doing Sunday mornings with Mike T previewing the NFL. Stop.
What happens? Let me ask you a question. What happens when Anita leaves? Do you guys just, Chris, do you end up driving the show?
Yes. I end up driving the show, often off the rails, but yeah, that's what happens.
Hey, Rick, I'm just along for the ride. I'm just happy to be there. So, you know, there's not much else I could have beyond that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do every single day, Mike.
There you go. We've heard good things about the show, though. Mike, good stuff. Remain energized. We'll talk to you next week. We always appreciate it.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. That, of course, is a peppy, a poppin', Mike Tennant.
Poppin'.
Right?
That was so good.
Have you ever heard a stadium referred to like that, though? M&T Bank
Baltimore
Stadium
would have been
popping.
No.
Right?
No.
Would have been just popping.
Not for Mike Tannenbaum, no.
No, we're not expecting that. All right, but 2020, anything can happen. Today on ESPN Daily, the Miami Heat are just, they're only two wins away from the NBA Finals. Get inside the mind of Miami star Jimmy Butler. See if he's ready for next level success. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. All right. Timing is perfect. It's right at 10:30. We have plenty of time. Rick, the floor is yours.
All right. Here we go, fellas. Got a Tuesday NFL edition of Cuddle, Marry, Trash. And because I'm going to stick with what's going on here in New York, I'm going to start with most devastating injury of week two. Most devastating injury of week two. I'm going to give you Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. Nicky Bosa or Christian McCaffrey?
All right. Chris, I'll go first here.
Okay.
I'm going to say, and you're going to be surprised by this, I'm going to marry Nicky Bosa. And I'll tell you
socially
why.
Socially acceptable.
Not
I would marry them.
Because that's a team with legitimate Super Bowl expectations. I think those take a monster hit without Nick Bosa. He is one of the best defensive players in all of football. So I'll marry him. I'll cuddle Saquon. A,
bombs,
he's out for the year.
Hellacious season.
McCaffrey's just going to be right 4-6. B, it's a devastating injury. And you heard Mike Tannenbaum say he doesn't know, you know, what level he'll be at next year. So I will cuddle Saquon. And he was the key to the Giants having a decent season. He's out now. God knows what happens moving forward. McCaffrey is certainly a loss. He's the huge piece to that team. But they're awful anyway. With him, they're bad. Without him, they're going to be bad. So I will trash Christian McCaffrey.
We can move on to the next category because I agree with Dave across the board.
Boom.
You know what? I will say this, though. The one scary thing with Saquon isn't necessarily ACL. I mean, with where medicine is now, it's
meniscus.
More when you... Exactly. When you heard meniscus is what does the cartilage look like on the other side of the meniscus?
You don't regrow cartilage.
It's a bad injury. You're telling me that. Bad injury.
That was the worst day of my life. I can promise you that. When the doctor's like, "Well, we can't fix that." I was like, "What do you mean you can't fix that? You're the doctors." No.
They didn't even try to microfracture it or anything.
No, they did. I went microfracture. That didn't work. And then I actually got a plug.
The plug is like a last ditch effort.
Yeah, I got a cartilage plug, but I still got a hole on the other side because I couldn't take my knee apart. Mess. All right, here we go. Which 0-2 team you think still has an opportunity to figure this thing out and make the playoffs? I'm going to give you the Minnesota Vikings. I'm going to give you the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm going to give you the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay, I'm going to start first. I'm going to go with the Falcons. Just because of this trio, I just have the most confidence in one of their identity as a team. Like with the Falcons, the offense is their identity. And they still have Matt Ryan, a former MVP, and they got Julio Jones, who's still in the conversation as the best wide receiver in the National Football League. So I feel more confident about their identity than any of those other two teams. Plus, they got a head coach that's on the hot seat that has to absolutely win. So if any of these three teams can pull out of the nosedive, it would be the Falcons. That's why I'm going to marry them. The second team I would go with would be the Eagles.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Just by virtue of the division that they're in, I'm not scared of any of the teams. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys were a team that we thought had true title aspirations. And even after their win on Sunday over the Falcons, I'm still not that impressed with them as a team. So I think the Eagles, by default, have an opportunity just based on the division that they're in. So I'll cuddle them. And I'll trash the Vikings because I think they're a mess. Their offensive line is awful. Kirk Cousins is playing awful. And their defense just isn't the same. They've had to move on from some guys. And Danny Hunter's out of the lineup. So I think the Vikings are a mess right now.
All right. We agreed with the first one. We will not agree here. Not too far off, though. I'm going to marry, and you'll be surprised by this, Philadelphia.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Not because I love the Eagles and not because I think they're great. I think
the division stinks.
Is really, really, really bad. The Giants stink. Washington is not very good. They looked awful on Sunday. And Dallas, if not for an absolute miracle, would be staring at 0-3 in the face if they have a trip out to Seattle this week. So I don't like Philadelphia at all. I don't think they're great. Their offensive line is a mess. But I'll marry them just because I think the division is just so bad. You know, I like Mike Zimmer, and for that, and I know that Kirk Cousins is not a great quarterback, and their division is difficult, but I'm going to cuddle into Minnesota.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I do not believe in Atlanta. I mean, how many times, and because they're so talented, that's a team that should not be looking like this. They should be a team that's an 8, 9, 10 win team. To lose that game, I don't know how you recover from that. They better this week. I don't know how you do. I will trash the Falcons.
All right, here we go. Dave, you're up first on this one.
Okay.
Fugazi 2-0 team. The Bears, the Cardinals, or the Las Vegas Raiders?
All right, I'm going to start at the bottom here. I'm going to trash. So the one that I believe is the most Fugazi. The most Fugazi starts at the top here, yes?
You're going to marry the most Fugazi, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to trash Arizona. I think they're legitimate. I do. I think he is really tough to stop. Hopkins is a major weapon. Their defense is pretty good, right? It's not like they have one receiver solely. I think that's a good football team. I think they're going to be a postseason team. So I will trash Arizona. Boy, I don't like either of the next two teams. I will.
This is not difficult.
Really? It is
no,
for me.
This is not difficult.
I'm going to cuddle the Raiders,
bombs and
but I don't think they're great by any stretch. If you look at their next three games, I think there's a pretty good chance they're staring 2-3 in the face. I do like John Gruden, and I do like Derek Carr a little bit as well, and I think that they're a team trending in the right direction. I'm sorry. This is why I thought the Giants would beat this team. I think the Bears stink. I think the Bears are a 7-win football team despite starting 2-0, so I will marry the Chicago Bears.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Agreed across the board. Move on to the next category.
Wow. Oh, look at you guys. Nice and tight. This is midway through the season week at CMT. Hottest seat. And when I mean hot seat, I mean like this is the middle of the summer. It's me sitting on the cross Bronx in traffic kind of hot. That's how hot this seat is.
Is there a bottle? Do we have a bottle?
Oh, yeah. This is two times the bottle. I got the heated seat on just to keep my back loose so I don't tighten up. Dan
sitting
Quinn
on the bleachers in Arizona in the middle of the summer kind of hot.
That's just torture. I did that at Wrigley Field one time. I got booed because I stood up and I had such bad swamp swass that they were booing me. It was disgusting. It looked like I went down a water slide. Dan Quinn.
What's the question again?
Hottest seat. This is hottest seat. Right. This is sweating through your pants hot. Mm-hmm. Dan Quinn, Adam Gase, or Matt Patricia?
All right, I'm going to start... I'm going to start with the worst of the worst. I'm going to go Adam Gase. I mean, quite frankly, he shouldn't have got a job 2 years ago when he was fired from the Miami Dolphins. I don't know what Chris Johnson was thinking, but Adam Gase's seat has to be hot. I mean, the team has looked awful. They're the worst team in the NFL. At least the other 31 teams look competent when they play, not the Jets. So for that reason, I got to say that he's got the hottest seat. I'm going to marry him. I am going to cuddle up to Dan Quinn.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And here's the thing. Not that Matt Patricia isn't on the hot seat, but, I mean, with the Falcons, Dan Quinn has gotten rid of all his coordinators. They pretty much fired everybody else in the organization that has been associated with that team over the past 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, there's really no one else left. So Dan Quinn absolutely has to get it done, and Arthur Blank has made it clear that he's not going to ignore the fan base like he did last year, like he did coming off of the loss that they had in the Super Bowl. So he's on the second hottest seat of this trio. And then I'm going to trash Matt Patricia by default, not because I don't think he's on the hot seat, but just because I think the other two coaches' seats are hotter.
Yeah, I don't even think that what Adam Gase is on is a hot seat. Like, it's lava. He's sitting on, like, the floor is lava is what he's playing right now. So I'll agree. I don't want to waste time. Across the board, I agree with Chris.
All right, here we go. Last one. I didn't realize you guys were going to be this quick, but I got one left. quarterback you're most concerned with after 2 weeks. I'm going to give you Kirk Cousins, Carson Wentz, or Drew Brees. Most concerned
about. Kirk Cousins, Carson Wentz, or Brees. All right. I'm going to tell you Carson Wentz, and I'll tell you why. So I will marry Carson Wentz.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Because he's supposed to be really good. Like, of these three guys, in my mind, he clearly has the highest expectation, and he looks bad. So I'll marry Carson Wentz. I will cuddle Kirk Cousins.
Bombs and hellacious seats.
Because I think there's still expectations with him. And I will trash Drew Brees. You say, wait, how could you trash Drew Brees? Because I don't think he's good. So you say, who looks the worst? He should look the worst. I didn't think he was good last year. I thought he's the reason they kind of lost in the postseason. You could argue the last two seasons. So the fact that he continues to look bad at this advanced age when we know he's on the way out, I will trash Drew Brees.
One man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm going to marry Drew Brees
in terms of concern level.
Because here's the thing. Drew Brees was mulling over retirement, and Bill Parcells used to always say, if you're thinking about being retired, you are retired. Well, I kind of feel that way about Drew Brees. And the way that he's played in the playoffs the last 2 years, I didn't think there was much left in the tank. And last night's game only confirmed that. So I'm going to marry Drew Brees just from the expectations of the team. The Saints are supposed to be a title contender. That's the whole reason he came back. So I'm going to marry that one. I am going to cuddle Kirk Cousins. The Vikings gave him a contract extension this offseason because they felt like they had a Super Bowl contending team. A lot of people picked them as a dark horse Super Bowl candidate, and a lot of folks felt like they would win the NFC North. And based on how this team has looked, they've looked terrible. And they've had to move on from some key pieces, especially in the secondary, that because they paid Kirk Cousins. And so now Kirk Cousins looking the way that he is, yeah, I'm concerned about that team getting right. I'm concerned about Kirk Cousins especially. I'm going to trash Carson Wentz just because I've seen high-end talent from Carson Wentz and they have a Super Bowl-winning coach. Like, I know that at some point they'll figure it out. And I can also point to the offensive line troubles as to why Carson Wentz is struggling a little bit. So I'm not as worried about that one.
All right, there you go, boys. That is a Tuesday edition of CMT.
Terrific. Thursday, we'll do it again. Tomorrow, in observations. Friday, of course, is a football frenzy. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. A terrific CMT. Put me in a very good mood. We got all Andy from Merrick's questions right. You did a beautiful CMT. We're rolling along here today. Let's go to the phones. We'll get to the NBA in a moment. Nick in Brick. Nick, you're next up on 98.7.
What's up, boys? Big fans of the show. Couple things. I mean, with this Jets team, I'm just devastated and miserable. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you obviously knew, looking at the weapons, looking at the defense, what was going to happen. I'm kind of like a little flabbergasted that you guys are surprised that they're this bad. The thing is,
Nick, they look like they've never played football before. I don't think we're surprised they're 0-2. We're surprised that they're putrid to watch.
Sure. So, like, on the defensive side, here's the problem, right? You lost two of your best players. You lost probably the best safety in football and one of the top five best linebackers in football that aren't even playing. So that's like huge loss on the defense. And Chris said it yesterday, Avery Williamson, why is he not playing football right now? How many snaps? He had like 10 snaps or something.
That wasn't me. That was Bart. That wasn't me. That was Bart.
Oh, that was Bart. Yeah, my bad. That was Bart. Yeah. So like, I don't understand that aspect of it. And on the offside, on the offensive side, I mean, you lose your best player in Le'Veon Bell, which Adam Gibbs doesn't even know how to use him anyway. And then you have no one to throw the ball to. Jameson Crowder is a number one receiver. He's a number three receiver on an average team. And on top of all of it, I mean, this is obviously known. Gase does not get along with players for some reason. He doesn't connect with them. It happened in Miami. People don't like to play with him. The thing with Jarvis Landry, that was an issue. I just don't understand why you would bring a cancer to a team that needs to rebuild and a coach that sucks in the NFL and doesn't know what he's doing. It just clears that you're doing check down passes, you know, behind the line of scrimmage to hope that a guy, you know, breaks off a 50-yard run. You know, it's happened once. That's all he's doing is check downs and limiting Sam Darnold throwing the ball downfield. At least give it an opportunity to throw the ball downfield. I'm just such a miserable Jets fan. I hate this team. Every time after summer ends, it's football season. I'm up and ready to go. And then 2 weeks into the season, we got this garbage.
It's done.
I hate this.
And it's not, and Nick, it's not even thanks to the call. It's not even that they're 0-2, Rick. At least I don't think so. It's just the fact that they are so bad. They look like they're not an NFL team through 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, we didn't sit here, you know, this entire time and said that the Jets are going to be a playoff team. I mean, I told you straight out I was less concerned about wins and losses and more concerned about the development of Sam Darnold. And the fact that he looked like he, I mean, especially in that first week that he regressed, and then what you saw from the defense in week two, it's, I mean, it's embarrassing. You thought it would be, you thought it could be bad, but no one expected it to look this bad.
Yeah, I don't think anybody expected that. And you're bringing up all the personnel issues, but that has nothing to do with guys getting cut out of their gap on the first play of the 49ers game and Raheem Mostert hitting his head on the goalpost. Like, it has nothing to do with talent. Talent has nothing to do with them having to delay a game penalty on the first play
after
of a possession.
After a timeout.
Yeah, talent has nothing to do with that. Those are the things that we're pointing to, and we're saying this team is incompetent. They're inept. And that has to do with the head coach. That's all coaching. When you talk about how penalized the Jets are, the turnovers that we saw in the first game, like that all speaks to coaching. The decisions that Adam Gase is making, like his game management overall, it's awful.
So, not good. I
mean, you know, that's the part that probably bothers me, and it should bother Jets fans the most, because it doesn't have to be that way.
You know what?
You can be a team that doesn't have a lot of talent and still find a way to compete.
Yeah, you can play hard. I mean, everyone thought Jacksonville was actively tanking. And they've been, I mean,
they could be 2-0.
The Colts found out the hard way that ain't true.
Exactly right. But you know, the one thing I took away from having Mike Tannenbaum on, besides the fact that, you know, Baltimore usually is popping, is no, what he said about that defense. We all agree that Greg Williams is can coach, correct?
Yes.
Okay, but the point that Mike Tannenbaum brought up was that the Shanahans for 30 years, that's how they run the football. It almost like reinforced that it felt like a coup. Like, week two's performance felt like a coup to get rid of Adam Gase is what it felt like. Because Greg Williams usually has his team, defensively, they're usually prepared. And for that to happen, that seems
out of
character.
What about week one against a team that you should be as familiar with as any team that you play, and you come out and it looks like you have no idea what they're trying to do?
Well, I didn't think the defense was
it wasn't
awful.
Good.
No, it wasn't good. I mean, they're overmatched. I mean, their secondary is not good, and they put no pressure. They don't get much pressure on the quarterback. Especially when he's a mobile quarterback. I mean, they struggle, but I don't know. I know that Greg Williams can coach. I don't know if Adam Gase can coach.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.